Tell your smartphone to smarten up. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. On demand. The World Series starts up tonight in KC.
Hollins delivery. Ground ball down to third. Fair ball. Moustakas. There it is. The Kansas City Royals have won the American League pennant.
And the 2-0 and a swing and a ball. Hit deep to right field. And it is gone. Travis Ishikawa has just launched the Giants into the World Series.
You're listening to Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
7:03, Brady and Walker. This one tonight, it's as unlikely of a World Series matchup as we've seen for some time. Now, San Francisco is in their third World Series in 5 years. So part of that, Greg, isn't surprising. The fact that they had less than 90 wins and they still get there is, in Kansas City at this point, is incredibly surprising the way they've rolled through the postseason.
Yeah, first one ever, first team ever to get there with first two teams to match up with that less than 90 wins in a non-strike-shortened year, which we've had before. We obviously did coming out of the big strike in 1994 because they missed a few games in 95. But you're right. I think San Francisco, though they're on the road, they're everybody's pick. They're everybody's favorite. They go into Pittsburgh, win that wild card, no trouble, none in the NLDS. And then they kind of have they had even the more impressive victory? The Royals haven't lost. And yet you almost have to be more impressed by San Fran dumping St. Louis as they dump them in five games. That's just not what you do to the St. Louis Cardinals come playoff time. And both those franchises, I mean, in all of pro sports, Andrew, what are we talking? The San Antonio Spurs, probably the New England Patriots still, and then there's the Giants and Cardinals both in the National League. Maybe those four teams in all four major sports are just teams you don't want to bet against. And I wouldn't want to bet against the Giants, and especially tonight. Bumgarner's taken this to an extra level. Like, we don't talk about him.
He's been really good.
Is he? Can he get to Verlander 3 years ago, Kershaw now? I don't know. But for guys under 25, he's 24 years old. He's as threatening as it gets to do that. If you want to pencil him in as the guy that could take the Cy Young away from Clayton Kershaw next year, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. He's that good.
His body of work in this postseason is probably more along the lines of what we expected to see from a World Series-bound Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, that's right? That's it. Yeah. And we look at Kershaw and his postseason, and again, without going too deep in on Kershaw, disappointing. And it doesn't make him any less a great pitcher, but his legend would have grown with some good playoff performances against the St. Louis Cardinals, and he hasn't been able to provide that. Bumgarner's been on an amazing run right from that wild card game in Pittsburgh. Right, remember the grand slam they got against the Pirates and against Edinson Volquez, and you just knew. Madison, the night before was all the drama of Oakland, Kansas City. The next night, it's San Fran and Pittsburgh. Bumgarner gets a 4-0 lead, lights out, change the channel. You know, you can watch anything else on the planet. You don't have to worry about them coming back on Bumgarner. He's been that exceptional, and he goes tonight against James Shields. Tomorrow's more the opening, I think, Andrew, for Yordano Ventura and the Royals against Jake Peavy, a guy that if you can get to early and teams have this playoff, they got to him last playoff, the Tigers did in the ALCS, then you got an opportunity.
Yeah, the only thing is, and it's tricky, because if you go to Vegas today, the smart money is on the team that's been there, done that in San Francisco. Yet it seems awfully futile right now to bet against Kansas City or to try to make any sense of what has happened this postseason.
Yeah.
Right? It's really easy to go out and say, well, Madison Bumgarner shuts it down in game one, and we're talking about a 2-0 Kansas City or a 2-0 San Francisco win. Or tomorrow morning, we're sitting here talking about a 9-8, 12-inning affair, right? Would that blow your doors off? Probably not.
Oh, tonight?
Would that stun you beyond belief?
Yeah,
no,
well,
not the way this postseason is gone.
There's that, but the way Bumgarner's been. World Series against Texas in 10, 8 innings, no runs given up, 6 strikeouts. 2 years ago, that was the famous Doug Fister's hit in the head, and some of our colleagues were screaming, get him out. Save his life. Get him on a gurney. His brain is injured.
Yeah, he's fine, man. It glanced off the side of his head.
Okay. But Bumgarner went 7 shutout innings in that game. That was a great game two duel. So World Series-wise, he's gone 15 innings and hasn't given up a run. And those are two pretty potent offenses. Texas 4 years ago, Detroit 2 years ago. The Royals don't have the firepower those two teams had. So I feel like San Fran's going to walk tonight, and tomorrow's the key game. I'd watch anyway on Sportsnet. I'd listen anyway on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And Mike Wilner, of course, has Jose Bautista with him for half an hour tonight in the pregame after 7 o'clock.
Really quickly, agree or disagree with me? Key to the series,
disagree,
most important
always.
Player.
Oh.
Most important player in this series is Buster Posey, to try to find a way to keep Kansas City from running absolutely wild on the base pass.
Yeah, that's reasonable. Kansas City got past, and I'd say they especially got past Anaheim, and the win against Oakland in the wild card because of their ability to take the extra base and their ability to steal. You're not going to see, that's an unusual rarity to have seven steals in a game. But if runs are at a premium tonight, if it's going to take three to win, if Shields is on his horse and this is a 3-2-4-3 game, then, yeah, Buster Posey's got a big role in this, for sure.
7:08, Brady and Walker, as we do have tickets to give away to you this weekend. You want to see the Bruins in Toronto at the ACC. Clue number two is coming up in about 5 minutes from now. First, let's get you what you need to know on your Tuesday.
This is your Tuesday morning six-pack. Six things you need to start your day.
Number six, because of the time difference, it seems like a weird time for this to happen. But as we got into work this morning, here is some news from South Africa, Greg. The double amputee, South African Olympian Oscar Pistorius, sentenced this morning to 5 years in prison for killing girlfriend Reeva Steenkamp. A South African judge cited gross negligence he showed when he shot her multiple times through a bathroom door in his home.
Just kind of, again, it's a sad story. There's no jokes to make. There's no winners in this particular story. Even the Pistorius family, you think of everything he's gone through with the physical, I know we don't want to say handicaps or disabilities, but the physical issues he's overcome to become this iconic inspiration to a lot of people. This was, I think, on a global scale, as big as Lance Armstrong at his peak. I really do believe that. And this happens, and he's going to jail potentially for 5 years. And obviously another family are the greater victims. They've lost their daughter for the rest of their life. It's an awful story, no matter which way you look at it.
Number five, Eric Francis is going to join us coming up in about 12 minutes from now. And we'll ask him about TJ Brody. The Calgary Flames make some news yesterday. The Ontario kid signs a 5-year extension to the tune of $23 million. He's a player that is kind of in the midst of a year-and-a-half breakout right now. And the market has kind of been set now, hasn't it, for these young defensemen? We saw Jake Muzzin and Jake Gardner and Roman Josi a couple of years ago kind of sign this similar type of deal. If this means anything to the Leafs, I guess we're looking at a number that Morgan Rielly could be comparable to when his deal is up.
This is a good story, though. Both you and I have experience with him. I saw him and called some of his games in Saginaw. He was on a really deep team, didn't get to play much his first couple of years, and you would have seen him. But more, he was shuttling a lot between Calgary and Abbotsford, even for not very good Flames teams. There must have been times when you looked at him and thought, some nights he's got it, and other nights, I'm not sure this is a... This is an above-average NHL defenseman.
Well, this was a classic kid that once he got to the NHL, and maybe we're seeing the same thing with Stuart Percy, better at the NHL than he was at the AHL or junior hockey.
Yeah.
Everybody knew that TJ Brody was going to be good, but there was a big controversy, like there is with everybody, over, oh my heavens, do you sign a bridge deal or do you lock him up long-term? I think it's another example of, I mean, PK Subban is the rare exception. Generally speaking, you prove yourself on that bridge deal, and everybody wins coming out of it. Everybody wins.
Yep, the money's right. You get the playing time, you get the contract and the security. It works that way.
Number four, the Edmonton Oilers are the last team, Greg, in the Western Conference to win a hockey game. They beat Tampa 3-2 last night, improved to 1-4-1 on the season. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, the game winner. So everybody's been talking about the Oilers, and last night was a standalone game, so all eyeballs were on Rexall Place. If they would have lost this game, their sixth in a row to start the season, things go from bad to worse. Now, some would say they've maybe deserved better in their first five games. Where do you peg the Oilers now?
Well, I don't think they're a playoff team, not by a long shot, but that's the problem, is are they going to be stuck in no man's land where it's embarrassing to draft top five again. It is. It's been embarrassing the last 2 years for the Oilers to draft top five. And there's been no inactivity. There's been no sizable activity outside of basically trading Sam Gagne and getting nothing back for him. And if they think there was too much of a glut at Ford and Gagne's outlived his usefulness.
They traded him straight up for Teddy Purcell.
Is that enough? At the end of the day, isn't that less than what we thought Gagne would have got two or three years ago?
Gagne's no good. He's no good.
Well, I wouldn't say no good. Okay? Would you say Purcell's no good and they got proper value for him then, didn't they?
I think Edmonton did pretty well on that deal, to be honest.
Okay, so they didn't. So we're not talking about two no good players. You're saying he's overrated. You're saying he's not a guy that can step in
I'm saying he's a tweener. I'm saying he's the third best centerman here in Toronto if he comes.
But I guess I look at Edmonton and think, why make the deal now when they've had the last two summers to sit there and make these kind of moves? And why call up a team and offer them Jordan Eberle now when you had all summer to get the right deal for your team and get whoever you get for an Eberle or a Yakupov in the camp and get them assimilated? Why now? It looks like panic now if they do something.
Number three, NFL Monday Nighter. Well, some would say it is time to panic. NFL Monday Nighter, Pittsburgh gets it done over Houston. Is there a more difficult team to read than the Pittsburgh Steelers right now? They don't have that classic good Steelers defense. The offense is actually pretty good, but they've gone win one, lose one, win one, lose one for seven in a row now. They're 4-3.
And it's not like they left some plays on the field yesterday. I mean, they scored in such an unbelievable spurt, right? With 3 minutes left in the second quarter. It's like field goal, touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. 24 points in 3 minutes to erase a 13-0 deficit. You're hesitant to say, wow, they looked really good for 60 minutes. Because they looked awesome for three.
I felt Houston gave them that game last night. I really did.
Why didn't J.J. Watt play? Was he just injury? I assume he wasn't a factor.
This is a bad take.
No,
you
it's
have.
Not.
I'm not going to let you get away with
There's
it.
There's a great. Oh, he might be the NFL MVP. Yeah, Pittsburgh just rolled up 30 points on them. But he's that good.
Because the offense turned it over 9 times.
Oh,
number
really?
Two,
Short
game one
time.
Of the World Series goes tonight. As mentioned, 8 o'clock start right here at Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Jose Bautista, is on our pregame show with Mike Wilner at 7:30. The number one thing you need to know, the Leafs on the road tonight taking on the New York Islanders. Real nice test for this team. They go against another top center in John Tavares. They are 1-0-1 away from the ACC this season. We'll see if they can keep it going tonight.
Who would you have checking the Grabowski line tonight if Grabowski gets back and is healthy? I know he's still...
Grabowski's laying in a hospital.
He had a long
bed.
Recovery from that John...
Beat it,
he's at home. He's doing push-ups and he's excited for tonight.
We want to send you to the ACC this weekend. Toronto takes on the Boston Bruins this Saturday night, courtesy of the Great Blue Heron Casino. Your third and final clue is coming up at 8:14. Name us that player. Here's your second clue this morning. Name that player. He's a classic goal scorer in the sense of, in his 5 seasons with the Leafs, he had more goals than he did assists 4 times. A bit of a rarity for NHL forwards. Your third and final clue coming up at 8:14.
7:22, Eric Francis, our NHL on Sportsnet insider. And at 7:30, we tell you about a mom who wants Toys R Us to stop selling a toy that's action figures that are in a... basically a tribute to a very, very popular television show. She's worried about the kids, and really, shouldn't we all be?
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. This is Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Pilar. Goes cross ice. Eberle on the intercept. Nugent Hopkins. Reese shot scores! Eberle! Nugent Hopkins! The Oilers! We take the lead!
All I need is a miracle.
It's not a miracle. They're going to win their fair share of games at home this year. Okay, maybe not against teams as good as Tampa.
I do have a funny story to tell you, too, before we get to Eric Francis. It is Brady Walker, by the way, 7:24. So the Oilers win last night. The final team in the Western Conference to win a game. They needed it. They had started the season 0-4-1. They get it over Tampa 3-2. There was a tweet last night. I'm from out west. I follow a lot of people from Edmonton.
Oh, you don't
say. Calgary. And there's this tweet last night, and someone says, no word of a lie, I am stuck in traffic right now on Wayne Gretzky Drive, which is the road in Edmonton leading up to the hockey rink. And kind of
They're not in Brantford. They have a Wayne Gretzky Parkway there, so that's different.
Correct. So, Yeah, I'm stuck in traffic on Wayne Gretzky Drive, and I can't move, and people are, like, honking in celebration. It was like a 2006 or 1984 celebration because they won their first game of the year.
And it should be.
Big win.
It should be a big celebration.
Monkey off the back.
Eric Francis is our NHL insider for the Calgary Sun, NHL and Sports and Insider, brought to you by Cicely Honda. This will be the moment when the Oilers are deep into the playoffs that they turn it all around, won't it be? That late Ryan Nugent-Hopkins goal?
They're certainly on a run, and there's no doubt about that. You know, people in Edmonton don't have a whole lot to cheer about at the best of times. So, Andrew, I don't think it's right for you to come down on them.
I thought it was funny. All right, but in all seriousness, and you are from Calgary, so it's real easy to take pot shots 3 hours down the road. We see it all the time. I feel you are overly critical of everything to do with Edmonton, in the sense of there's got to be some sort of light or something they can do here.
Well, you tell me what it is. I mean, I think the only thing that they can do right now, because you talk to people out west, you talk to people in Edmonton, I mean, a lot of people have just given up. I mean, this is, what, year three or four where people were surely that with all that talent, they can turn things around.
Well, I don't know about that. They're still selling out the building every night.
Yeah, but the mood is obviously pretty dour, other than those, you know, 1,200 people or whatever that jammed Wayne Gretzky drive last night. You know, you got that top line, and, yeah, I mean, they're good. Taylor Hall is as good as any, you know, he's a superstar in the National Hockey League. He's not just good. He's a superstar, and he'll be considered for Team Canada for the rest of his career. You know, and their second line is actually not that bad. But here's the problem. You can sit here and break down their lineup all you want, but at the end of the day, Craig McTavish talked his way into a job with the owner, Daryl Cates, by saying, look, bold moves are required. We need to think outside the box. We need to do things that people aren't expecting. We need to be bold. His words, not mine. Well, he has done nothing bold whatsoever since he took over as GM, and they need to change that culture. You talk to anyone around the league, and they'll tell you that culture there, the attitude of the players, quietly behind closed doors, is just garbage. These guys aren't professionals. They don't act like professionals. They're not being professionals by the way they play. So until you change the culture, which means you got to change the GM, nothing's going to change.
Okay, well, that's my question for you then, because it's Craig McTavish has only been on the job for a year and a half. What happened before that guy... Hey, it wasn't his fault. I think Kevin Lowe and Steve Tambellini did a hell of a bad job putting together that roster.
Yeah.
Craig McTavish, in his 18 months at the wheel, has changed over that roster more than any roster in the National Hockey League. When you say bold, is there anything that isn't bold that doesn't involve Jordan Eberle?
No. Keep going. I know what you're going to say. Jordan Eberle, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Taylor Hall.
Or Taylor Hall.
Yakupov.
Or one of those three, yeah.
Yeah, or Yakupov. One of those guys has to go, and obviously everyone points to Yakupov as being the weakest of the bunch, and obviously he is by far. But, you know, until you get, you got to break up that old gang that goes out boozing every night, you know, just that gang that just continues to lead this team into oblivion. You've got to do something to shake it up. I mean, help me with this, Brady. I mean, can you not see this too?
I mean, I'm not casting aspersions.
I'm not saying I don't see it. I'm saying it's just really easy to say, do something. Well, what?
I drink.
What's the plan?
I don't know that he is, but I'd drink too if I was Taylor Hall and I was 23 and I was in Edmonton and I hadn't played a playoff game yet. I would. I might drink privately. Maybe there is something there to that extent. That said, Eberle's career could be almost half over. I mean, if he plays 16 years, that's a hell of a career, and he hasn't played a playoff game. Hall's could already be a third over, and he's 23 years old, and he's had a couple really bad injuries. I agree. Their frustration level should be through the skylights right now, but I'm not sure it is. There is that sense of contentment with this, and it's unacceptable.
Like, you go around the league and you start looking at every team that's a bottom feeder or in the bottom half or rebuilding or even some of the good teams. You ask people in the city, and I'm not saying that you gauge anything by what Joe Fan or Joe Media has to say, but it's pretty evident in a lot of cities what you can maybe do to get better. We needed a better defensive game. We need better defensemen. We need to be tougher, blah, blah, blah. You can't really pinpoint it in Edmonton what's wrong. And so people there, you ask anyone and they kind of just throw up their hands and say, I don't know. So everyone just points to the.
Well, how about an elite? You'd say an elite goalie. Let's be honest. They've been running out Devin Dubnyk and Ben Scrivens, and now Victor Fast. I mean, you transplant. I'm trying to think even of a name. You transplant. Give me a goalie name. I mean, anybody onto that team, and you change things a little bit, don't you? Everybody walks with a little bit more swagger, don't they? Everybody plays with a little more swagger. I'm not talking. Hey, you can't get Henrik Lundqvist, but let's throw Ryan Miller on Edmonton.
They really tried to get Corey Schneider. Right? It's not like they're blind to it, but Vancouver wouldn't trade him in the division.
Yeah, it's obviously one of the toughest commodities to land in the National Hockey League. They thought that they had addressed that. And, you know, I think they certainly upgraded their goaltending this year. You guys have seen Scrivens act, and, you know, he's hot and cold, and there's some potential there, but I don't think anyone thinks he's the answer.
No.
It's not that easy to just go out and grab a guy, although Ryan Miller was there for the taking, you know, but you could debate whether or not that would have been a good move to get an aging goaltender, you know, on a team that's rebuilding or, you know, or trying to rebuild. Everyone just keeps coming back to Dallas Eakins, and that's the question you get asked out West here all the time. Should Eakins go? Sure, you could go. How many? What have they gone through? 9 coaches in the last 8 years, or some? It's some ridiculous number. I'm one of these ones who says keep Eakins there. I mean, he's got a pretty good track record in the minors, and he's well respected around the league. Give him a chance to run with it a little longer than this. It's up at the upper levels. They need to make some very major changes, obviously.
So, meanwhile, as your Calgary Flames might get home ice advantage in the postseason. We'll see. But we want you to weigh in on a wager we made. We go back and forth on Joel Colburn.
I've already
all
conceded
the time
that I'm not winning the wager.
Well,
let's
ask the NHL insider. Let's ask our
heavens.
Expert. Brady said Joel Colburn's getting 20 goals, and I said not a chance in hell. And we bet $100 on it.
Oh.
He has 0, for the record.
Yeah, he has 0. He's amongst league scoring leaders, though, right now. I think he's got 6 or 7 assists.
Yeah, the bet should have been 48 points. I'd feel a lot better about that right now.
In his season high, what has he got, 25? Last year was his breakout year, and I think he had 25 points, not 20 goals.
Yeah, 10 goals, 28 points. That was his breakout season.
I honestly, this year there's no way he's getting 20 goals, but I do feel like he's going to be the breakout player in Calgary this year, and I think he will eventually score 20 goals. I just don't know if it's going to be this year. He's playing with Johnny Gaudreau, who's the Hobie Baker winner from last year and has huge upside. If they continue to play together, there's certainly a chance in upcoming years he'll get 20. But Brady.
It's a bad bet. You've seen me make some bad bets before. I'm just worried Brian McGrattan's going to pass him for goals at some point in the next couple weeks.
That's a big concern here.
I think
the point that Brady's probably trying to make, and I'm not trying to defend him here, but Colburn is ready to break out. You know, I know when he was in
like his like his skin.
Frustrated. I think he's ready to break out. I think he's going to be a 50 or 60 point guy in the National Hockey League as early as this year. I really think he's that good.
Right on.
Confidence. He's filling into that big frame of his. People who in Toronto gave up on him, I think they'll be surprised this year at how good he's going
to
be.
Well, they had to keep Oren McLaren on the roster last year, and Walker supported those.
I will also bet you $100 that he won't get 60 points. If you're going to throw out those figures. He just said this year 60
no,
points.
No, he didn't say this. No.
Yes, he did.
No, he didn't.
Let's play the tape back. He said it.
That would be bad radio.
Yeah,
I'm
not going to bet that he's going to get 60. Not this year. He's going to get it at some point,
sounds like Walker's in money trouble. He really is trying to siphon. it's like trying to get gas from other people's tanks. I don't know what's going on.
Would this have been double or nothing on the 100 you still owe me from our last golf round?
I'm sorry. I'll send you an email transfer today. Like we got like 20 seconds, but everyone talks about Edmonton. Is Winnipeg in worse shape or better shape than the Oilers?
I think, that's a great question. The upside for Edmonton, as we've all seen for 2 or 3 years, is higher. Winnipeg is just blah. I mean, what's sexy about that team? What makes you excited about that team?
They just don't play very well.
I'll say Winnipeg finishes below Edmonton in the standings this year. I'll go that far.
Eric, thanks for this, bud. We'll talk to you soon.
Cheers, boys.
Eric Francis, brought to you by Sicily Honda, our NHL on Sportsnet Insider. By the way, great games tonight. I know we've got World Series Game 1 on Sportsnet, but Detroit-Montreal, 7:30. Vancouver-Dallas, 8:30. Tampa moves on and plays in Calgary tonight at 9 o'clock. All available for free on Game Center Live if you're a Rogers customer. Rogers NHL Game Center Live. Mark Messier should have told you about it out front.
Right.
The Moose should have told you.
I'll make you a deal, though. I feel like we should change the Colburn bet a little bit. Instead of
this sounds like a trap.
Instead of betting dollars, why don't I, if you win, I'll buy you all the pina coladas you can drink.
Money also. You're just trading money for commodity.
Plus, I only know you can drink one, and that saves me some dough.
Yeah, I'm on a non, again, I'm irritable by not having sugar for the last 23 days, and you're making me more irritable now.
7:34, Brady and Walker. Clark Judge coming up at 7:42, our NFL insider. And also, the Buffalo Sabres retiring a jersey in January.
Their fans are throwing them, but they're retired. They're the one market that has. Can we get
That's
a Sabres
true.
Jersey on the ice?
They're
I feel
not,
like we, it's a
they're
short
not throwing jerseys
scenario.
In Buffalo
throw
or
them in
Florida
Buffalo.
Or Winnipeg, just Toronto at 2-3-1.
Throw
and
one of the old Matthew Barnaby black, red, and white ones for old time's sake.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Brady and Walker continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
And a diving catch for a touchdown! It was grabbed by Lance Moore! With a left-handed delivery from wide receiver Antonio Brown.
Don't you look back on the big loss.
7:43, Brady and Walker. Who is the best team in the AFC? Our next guest, Clark Judge, says it might not be who you think it is, according to him. Last night, Pittsburgh Steelers win the NFL Monday Nighter, Greg, 30-23 over the Houston Texans. They are one of those teams that how do you figure them out? The Buffalo Bills are 4-3. Now the Steelers are 4-3. There's things to like and things not to like.
Yeah, there's Houston, people got a little too in on them too early, thinking that they're going to turn this all around from being 32nd best record last year, drafting Jadeveon Clowney and rolling right now. Miami looks like they're a little more of a contender. Pittsburgh looks like a contender. It's funny though with Pittsburgh. I do agree. I think Pittsburgh's the one team. They could end up 7-9. They could surprise everybody and say the running game's good enough. The quarterback we know is established. He's healthy, which he sometimes isn't all the way through the season. And Pittsburgh could win 10 games and shock all of us. Clark Judge joins us. Talk of Fame Radio Network. We'll tell you where to find his latest as well as we go on. Clark, thanks again for coming on.
My pleasure, guys.
Yeah, it's one of these clustery AFC things, isn't it? San Diego was the big beneficiary of a late charge last year to that sixth seed, and they won their game. The team, they beat the Bengals, made late charges the last couple of years. There's this sense that the NFC, nobody begrudges an NFC team's playoff berth the last few years, but in the AFC, it just takes getting hot those last 3 or 4 weeks, and it really doesn't matter what your first 5 or 6 look like.
Yeah, but I think that's generally true around the board, guys. I mean, you look at some of the teams that won it in the past. I go back to like 2011. The Giants made it on the last day of the season. Last day I was there, they beat the Cowboys. They won the Super Bowl. The year before, the Packers made it on the last day of the season. They get in as a wild card, beat Chicago. Last day of the season, 10-3. They won the Super Bowl. It just tends to happen to people who get hot at the right time. And if you get hot down the stretch, that's why people have been out of shape about what's going on now. I go, wait a second, let's just wait till the end of November, early December, because that's when you want to stay healthy, you want to be injury-free, and start gaining some momentum. But in that sense, going back to what you were saying earlier, yeah, I mean, it's sort of wide open for some teams. But with the AFC, we always figure New England's going to be in there and Denver are going to be in there. And then you start filling in the rest of the blanks. And I think San Diego will be one of those teams. Whether it's a division winner or not, I don't know. They had a hiccup last week against Kansas City, but that happens. And then I look at Indianapolis. Honestly, I will tell you this. When the smoke clears, I believe now more than ever, and I believe this before the season, that Indianapolis is the team to beat in the AFC.
How much of that is due to the fact that, hey, their main important parts are so young that they can stand to get better in the next 8-9 weeks?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's also the fact that you talking about the Colts.
Yes.
Yeah, that Andrew Luck's got parts around him now that he didn't have last year, and Dwayne Allen's back. They've got Hakeem Nicks as an accessory there. He was a star receiver with the Giants, but now he's just an additional part there. Reggie Wayne's back. Now, Reggie Wayne hurt himself this week, but he's back. So he's got a lot of weapons around, but the biggest difference to me with them is defensively they're much better. I mean, you look at what happened last week. Whew, I mean, I don't know how you explain that with Cincinnati. I mean, it's one thing to get beaten, another thing to get embarrassed. They were embarrassed. I mean, week after getting 513 yards, they produced 135, most of it in the fourth quarter. They're completely outclassed by the Colts. If the Colts are going to play that kind of defense, and I don't expect that to happen week in and week out, but if they're improved to that extent during most of this year, they're going to be very tough to solve. And I know Denver right now is really the best team out there. Denver's playing very well. But Denver's got some older players, and I'm speaking specifically about the quarterback. Mm-hmm. You're right about Indianapolis. Younger players tend to hold up better through the long haul. The older guys tend to wear down as the season goes on. Of course, Peyton Manning, I think we probably can make an exception for. He seems to get better as he gets older.
Clark Judge joining us, 747 on Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, talkoffamenetwork.com is where you can read his latest. Yeah, I thought Indy-Cincinnati was that quintessential. How good is Luck and the separation that Luck has from a guy like Andy Dalton? I mean, we are making, and I think explanations more than excuses for Andy Dalton and the lack of productivity the last 2 weeks when we say A.J. Green's gone. Well, Matt Stafford's continuing to win games without Calvin Johnson. Andrew Luck doesn't have an A.J. Green, and he's still able to pump it for close to 400 yards every game. And again, not, I don't think a great offensive line, Clark, but he's got serviceable running backs, right? And Bradshaw and Richardson, they're okay. And not exactly like T.Y. Hilton, stick him on the Bengals, and he'd just be a guy to me.
Yeah, no, that's right. And you look what he did last year. I mean, T.Y. Hilton was his primary receiver because he'd subtracted so many people. But that's the kind of guy that can carry a team. I mean, I always go back when I talk to you guys about New England. I look at Tom Brady. Tell me the last time Tom Brady had an A.J. Green. I mean, he had Randy Moss. What did they do? They got rid of him. He had Deion Branch, who was a Super Bowl MVP. What did they do? They got rid of him. He had Wes Welker, who was a good short intermediate receiver. What did they do? They got rid of him. He doesn't have anyone to stretch the field, and yet Tom Brady continues to win a zillion games.
Clark Judge joining us on Brady and Walker. You wrote about Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers, a fantastic record in October. They seem to have turned the corner. They might have got away with that one game against the Jets with some late confusion on the Jets sideline. Since then, they've looked like world beaters. They've looked like a team that, again, with Aaron Rodgers healthy and James Starks and actually carrying the ball decently, they will be a tough team to beat, especially if they get to play a playoff game or two at Lambeau.
Yeah, they've steadied themselves, and I think when Aaron Rodgers said relax, he was talking about just what you did when you opened this segment, which is essentially as we get on with the season, we start to get stronger. Don't worry about these games in September, even early October. Let's not worry because we've got to build and gain some momentum. You see teams coming out of training camp, and I do think because of the way training camp's been changed with the two-a-days not happening anymore and the limited contact, that teams aren't as ready to get into the season as they have been in the past, and they're starting to gain momentum up in Green Bay, and Aaron Rodgers is on fire. I mean, they're playing so well right now. He's got great receivers around him. Randall Cobb is having a great year. Jordy Nelson's having a great year. I really thought the loss of the tight end, Jermichael Finley, would hurt them, but hasn't really seemed to be. And then defensively, again, they've improved. And that's where you have to look with all these ball clubs, because when you mentioned Pittsburgh, for instance, again, opening the segment, I don't take Pittsburgh that seriously. I love the quarterback. Ben Roethlisberger is so good and so established, and he can extend plays as others can. As Steve Young said, he's like the sixth offensive lineman. That said, they've got some holes in defense, and that's going to hurt them down the stretch.
Clark Judge, our guest, Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now, we have the tendency sometimes you can overreact week to week, but you look in the NFC right now. Now, given how strong the conference is, given how many good teams there are, and then you have San Francisco and Seattle, both with three losses already, how much of a concern should there be in both of those markets?
Well, there should be some concern in Seattle because they're cracked in that Legion of Boom. I saw it the week before when they lost at home to Dallas. They couldn't make the stops that they made last year. And then you saw it again this past weekend against St. Louis. And I understand the St. Louis special teams get a lot of credit for what they did. They pulled off some magic there. That said, they were the better team that day. And that shouldn't happen with Seattle. So the fact that Seattle has now started to lose some games at home, they got taken to overtime by Denver at home there this year. They lose to Dallas. That's a concern because they never used to lose there. And they've always been a shaky road team, but been able to manage things. Here, you've got a game where Russell Wilson throws for over 300 yards, runs for over 100 yards, gives you everything, and you still lose. Goes on the defense. That's where you got to start. So they've got to get that swagger back. I don't know if that's going to happen. They lost some guys over the offseason that weren't key guys, but they fit in. They were nice role players, and they're gone. Maybe that's what happens. Maybe they've lost some things inside that locker room there that they had last year. I would be concerned there. San Francisco, not so much. I know they got blown out in Denver, but look what's going to happen, guys. They're going to get some key people back. Alden Smith's going to come back. Navarro Bowman's going to come back. They're going to get some key people. Maybe even Dorsey comes back, but they're going to start getting better as the season goes on. Of those two, Seattle's the team I'd be more concerned with.
Excellent analysis. He's on talkoffamenetwork.com. The fizzles and sizzles are great. Read them there. Clark Judge joining us on Brady and Walker. Clark, thanks again as always.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
I'm Greg Brady. He's Andrew Walker. 8 o'clock on the way. We will get you your Toronto tickets for the Boston Bruins Saturday night. We'll have a third clue at 8:14 and a winner. And worst tweet of the day at 8:12. This story's fascinating. You were a fan of Breaking Bad. I was a fan of Breaking Bad.
Yes, yeah.
Toys R Us was selling, have been selling, action figures. Selling a Walter White action figure and a Jesse Pinkman. I would buy the Gustavo Fring one where he's making the chicken.
Like with his face half
off.
Why yeah,
why not? But they one Florida mother, it's always in Florida, has decided to fight back. She's put a petition together to get the toys out of the stores.
Well, is she completely wrong there? Because when you really think about it, yes, it is a TV show, but it's a TV show centered around meth production.
And murder and mayhem. They are selling the Breaking Bad dolls, detachable sacks of cash. That's pretty good. A bag of meth. Okay, you're doing fine. Alongside children's toys. Her quote is a dangerous deviation from their family-friendly values. Now, her point, Andrew, is that children see action figures and they want to emulate the action figures. But you sell Darth Vader action figures and he blows up planets. He exterminates entire civilizations.
I would say that's a little less believable than a meth lab out of a camper. I would say the Darth Vader storyline, a little more far-fetched.
If my 8-year-old says, hey, what do you want to be, a Jedi Knight? I go, well, that's not going to happen. A popular meth dealer in Albuquerque, I say that's not going to happen either.
That might happen. I've seen your kids.
Now, that said, it all depends on where you stock the toys, right? Like, if you stock them right next to all the other action figures, like He-Man, Masters of the Universe, who's obviously on steroids and PEDs.
But if these are...
He looks like Jose Canseco in 1989.
So if these action figures are marketed towards grown adults, as they should be if they come with accessories like bags of meth, what kind of losers are buying these things anyway?
I don't know. That's a really good question. Would you ever buy action figures? Has there ever been a TV show you liked?
No.
Enough to buy...
Why? Why would I ever have an action figure?
Would you like to come over and play with my Family Ties action figure set? I have Alex P. Keaton. I have Mallory.
Terrible.
I have, what's the chubby, Jennifer Keaton? No? Nothing?
Full your Family Matters action figures? Do you have a Steve Urkel? 754, Brady and Walker.
Modern Family. I know you stole my Sofia Vergara when your girlfriend was away, and I want it back. I don't know what you were doing with it.
At 8:02.
It's only a foot tall.
8:02, Leafs and Islanders play tonight. The Metropolitan leading New York Islanders. Have Brady and I finally come to an agreement and or an understanding on the Toronto Maple Leafs centerman situation? We'll tell you what that is coming up after 8:00.